This is Kurt, and this is the MFG Cast. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another live edition on YouTube of the MFG Cast. We haven't had a guest on here for quite a bit, actually. Probably John Haremza, a friend of the show, was probably the last time he was on talking about RenCon. But we have a special guest with us today. It's someone that we actually have had on the show a decent amount of times before in the past. If you watch our board game show, you'd see him a few times on that. We've also talked to him about some stuff going on with Stone Circle Games. It's John Moffitt. John, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. Yeah. The questions should be easier in this one, I hope. But
oh yeah, I hope so too. Yeah, my questions for that are always too hard. Even for me, I can never remember the answers normally. But we're here to talk about a game that you developed, designed, that is going to be put on Kickstarter here in the near future by Grail Games. It's called Night Soil. So I know a little bit about the background because you've kind of shared a little bit of it, but why don't you tell people what Night Soil, what the gist of Night Soil actually is?
Yeah, so half the people I explain it to, you say the name and they start giggling, and the other half have no idea. They just follow along and take me seriously. So it's always fun to see the reactions. Yeah, so Night Soil is, I kind of explain it as it's half worker placement board game and then half kind of like a spatial puzzle, figuring out routes and stuff. But it is indeed themed around sanitation. There really were people, you know, back in the late medieval and Tudor periods who that was their job. They went out in the middle of the night, they scooped up human waste, they put it in carts, and they sold it as fertilizer. That was a real, as far as I understand, a fairly lucrative occupation. Disgusting, but it was good money. So people did it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of those things that no matter what part of sanitation you work, whether it's back in those days or today, I think you should always be paid way too much money because that's not a great business.
No, it's never pleasant. No.
No. So where did you get the idea from this? Is this something that you just like you read a history book and you're like, wow, this would be kind of fun to make in a game? It's just kind of an interesting concept to make into a board game. So why choose that?
Yeah, I've tried to think of where I've heard. My best guess is I used to play Magic the Gathering back in, you know, middle school, grade school, and a little bit in high school. And there's a card called Night Soil, and it didn't, you know, it just, I think it was a pile of dirt with animals coming out of it. But I remember looking it up and like, what is that? Why is that? That's an interesting phrase. Night Soil sounds magical. It's not magical. But I definitely looked it up. So I suspect that's why it was in my head. But it was kind of back of my head. I thought it was an interesting idea that was someone's job. That's kind of neat. Okay, that's different. And then I don't know, for whatever reason, the first kind of prototypes, the first ideas I put down in little cards were a completely different theme. And it just wasn't working. It wasn't grabbing me. It was sort of a political, you know, thing. It wasn't grabbing me. And then I kind of had an idea like, well, I want this to be, but kind of the feeling I want is people to sort of be working together, but not really working together, like doing something. We all finish something, we all clean something, but we're not really going to care about who did what. And so things like you said, like sanitation, kind of came to mind. And then I was like, well, what's better than sanitation? Well, literally carting human waste. That's even funnier. Night Soil, that's perfect.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it just fit with what I was trying to do, the card play and stuff that kind of starting there. And then you get to use cool little brown cubes and be all coy about what they are. That worked out really well. But yeah, I attribute back to, we're always talking about Magic the Gathering inspiring things. That's my best guess is where I first heard of that.
Yeah, nice. So when it comes to, again, I'm going to stick to the theme of it just because it's so interesting to me. So, you know, when you play test it and you bring it to players and stuff like that, do they go, is this really it? Like, are you really sticking with this? Or do they, you know, or is it something that they're like, Because to me, when I see that, I'm like, that's something I've never seen in a board game, you know, at least far as I've seen, you know. So it's like, obviously, that's kind of interesting to me because I always love when people pick a concept or a certain topic or something that's not what other games have in them for most of the part.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, a lot of people, you know, my friends especially, would kind of just giggle and be like, "Well, this is a crappy game." Well, it's
yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah, fine. If that makes you happy, that's fine too." Yeah. So some people kind of like, well, "Why would you? That's weird. Why would you do that?" What I think is really funny is you know, I took it to conventions and stuff, kind of showed it around, I pitched it, you know, a number of places. What I noticed a trend of the reaction is a lot of people would take a look at it and say, okay, it's not just it's not just a pawn. There's actually a game here. They'd play it, they look at it, and be like, and then they'd all give me the same reaction and say, well, I like the theme. I think it's unique, but nobody else will. And everyone said that. Everyone said, no one's going to like this. I do, but nobody else will. Or I like it, but nobody will publish it, obviously. You know, and I kept hearing that same reaction from people. And eventually I was like, you know, maybe it isn't bad. It took me a while to come around. I was very nervous, you know, going back and forth. I had some backup plans for ways to retheme it. I had a couple people at Unpub, I don't know if you know Ian Zhang, gave me some really good advice. He said, it's making you happy, just do it. Just figure out how to just do it. So I said, fine. I actually pitched it the next day and went in with a straight face and said, I have a game about poop. I think you're really going to like it. Again, that was the funniest reaction is a lot of people liked it, but just knew in their hearts, they knew for sure that nobody else would like it. Right. It was the weirdest thing.
That's hilarious. I wonder, like, then you come to Grail Games, like how did this partnership start out? Is it something that somebody you knew in the business? Were you introduced? Did you just have a straight up, blind, like, you know, but some publishers have a come pitch something to me and let's see what happens. How did that all work out?
Yeah, more or less, I mean, it was kind of blind. I mean, I've been pitching it for a while. I had a number of different companies that, again, kind of took a look at it, said, yeah, this is, you know, not quite for us, but it's in the hand of somebody else. So it got bounced around for a number of years. And in that time, I had, because I'd pitched it so many times, I had the tabletop simulator, I had virtual, I had all this stuff ready to go. And then I saw, I think through a friend, it was kind of the parent company, Colossal, said, hey, pitch us something and here's the different lines, and Grail Games one of them. And I said, I think that'll fit. And so I sent it in and that's how it started. Is David from Grail Games said, oh yeah, I saw it. And I absolutely told the people Colossal, I want to see more of this. And so we did a little conversation like this and we talked it through and then that's the rest is history. But nice. Yeah, it was kind of a blind pitch, the final one.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's kind of it's one of those happy accidents that kind of happens, you exactly. know, that kind of thing. You know, you just kind of do your best. Well, you know what? Since I can't think of the other couple of things I was thinking of, why don't you kind of tell people about the mechanics of the game? Like, you know, you said it was kind of like a. Actually, I'll just let you do it. I'm having a moment.
That's fine. Tell us about the game. Yeah. Again, part of the, because I've pitched it so many times, I've gotten quicker anyway at explaining it. Maybe not better, but quicker. So it's kind of, I was explaining it, it's a worker placement game and a spatial puzzle, and it alternates back and forth between those two. So it's got two major phases to it, tracking the phases of the day and night. And during the day, you're putting out workers in London and doing pretty basic worker placement stuff. I want to get some money. I want to change turn order. A lot of it is controlling these, we call them patrons. They're little area control zones that give you special benefits. The really cool thing, I think, in Night Soil is that they overlap in weird ways. And so if you're placing a token on, say, the brewers, you can sort of indirectly take control of the Night's Watch as well by sort of overlapping and sneaking in back the ways that, you know, your opponent might have blocked you off, but you can kind of sneak in and take control from another way. So that's pretty straightforward. And then it sort of alternates into a spatial puzzle. During the day, when you're placing these workers, every time you put a worker down, they spawn, they create a Night Soil cube because they're working hard. They got to go to the bathroom. They make more cubes, right? And so you're sort of choosing and controlling to a degree how much the board and how fast the board fills up with waste. And then in the night, you flip over and you have to clean up that waste to do the Night Soil collection part. Nice. And kind of because of how the board's laid out and because there's a limit on how many cubes you can have in a space at any time, it kind of forms this weird sort of pathfinding spatial puzzle where you got to find a way. How do I maneuver this cube to get out? Because it's blocked this way, it's blocked that way. Okay, you put that thing in my way, I'm going to get around. So it's this kind of mean little, I'll shove this cube into your way and put mine this way and sell it. And then you're now you're blocked, but you do this. So it's a very back and forth kind of spatial puzzle thing. And then the other thing I think is kind of cool, like I said, where you put your workers will choose kind of control where cubes go. And so you're sort of making problems for other people. And then what you choose to clean up will mean that those spaces are clear the next day, the next round, and that kind of changes where people can place workers. So you can look at the board and say, you know what, I can get a couple of coins, a couple of points for cleaning up this space, but I don't want you to go there tomorrow, so I'm going to leave it dirty. Forget you. You can't place workers there. Too bad. Mm. So it's got that very, very aggressive.
Yeah. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, so it's a thing where if there's too much waste, like, then there's just no place for them to go because they have to clean up the stuff before people can actually move.
Exactly. Think you try to go and say, hey, I want to come work in this part of the city. And they say, we're sorry, it's closed. It's full of waste. You can't work here right now. We got to wait for the night soil guys to come.
Yeah. Nice. And then you get to, it sounds, by the sound of it, it sounds like you get to also influence different people in the city to kind of help you or hinder other players. Is that a right assumption?
Exactly. Yeah. There's this sort of like, we call them patrons, but they're sort of little tiles with a special ability you can get. And if you have the most favor with them, they'll help you out. The brewers will make things cheaper for you. They'll make some beer, share it with your friends, and you get services cheaper. And each of them has like a little power they give you that you can sort of use as long as you have it. And then a lot of the game is just stealing those from your opponents and jockeying for these different powers to make things better.
Yeah, nice. So in the design of this game, what was your, this is kind of a weird, like, I almost feel like when I say this, almost feels like you're at you're applying for a job, but what was your like biggest, like, and easiest success with making this game? And what was the hardest part of making Night Soil?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. Ooh, that's interesting. So the whole idea of the workers being the source of the cubes, you got to then clean up that interplay, that kind of came very naturally. Initially, you would place the workers and you'd do things. And then you would use in the night, you'd clean the cubes up. And I just kind of had these weird rules for where cubes show up. And I had all these cards and all this AI stuff to be like, okay, it does this and that, and you can do this with your workers. So that was actually a process of just saying, this is exhausting. I don't like this. It's boring. Let's just have the cube show up where there's people. Oh, wait a minute. That makes sense. people make waste. Oh, yeah, they do. So that was very natural. The hardest part, one core part of the game is that you don't have your own workers. They're all kind of neutral. They're just generic workers. And you send them out, they work for you, and then they're on the board. They're not yours anymore. You have to get them back somehow. And the way you get them back is you clean up that part of the city. You get rid of all the cubes, and then they're, yay, it's clean. We'll come back. We'll come work for you today. So you have to kind of, in the night, you have to earn your workers back. And the timing of how that works and sort of the mechanics around it, it's not complicated, but the way you kind of mark what you've done and then stop each other and then how you show that these are your workers to claim and not yours, that part took a lot of, that was a lot of back and forth and a lot of iterations to get that right. And again, I at least I hope it's very simple and intuitive, but it went through a lot of changes and it really changed the tone of the game a lot as I adjusted that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I had thought of another question because we've talked to, or as a podcast, we've talked to different people and stuff like that. So in your opinion, like, for playtesting a game, like, what is your goal for playtesting your game before you think this is about as polished as I can make it without it being produced? Like, is it, do you make like a set number of plays? Do you make it to a certain point to where the people that are playing it, you have satisfied everybody's questions? Like, how do you decide that?
Yeah. So especially with games that are bigger like this, like Night Soil, where it takes a while to play, you know, for a 5-minute card game, I don't do this, but for a bigger game, you know, I make sure that I can play through a full game and I'm not bored and angry and cranky and it works before I show anybody at all, because I want to make sure, hey, if you're going to spend an hour, you know, with me. I don't want to be miserable for you. So that's my first test before I kind of put in people and say, hey, this is an actual game. I know how it ends. I know how to win. That's all worked out. Maybe it's broken and janky, but at least it's an actual game. I try to get to that point. Where I am with, you know, feeling like it's done, I never feel like things are done. And sometimes I feel like the reason I want to have my games produced and sold is because then it is done. And I can't meddle anymore. And someone's saying, no, this is yours. We bought it. Stop touching it. So that takes a weight off my shoulders. But as for when I think it's ready to pitch, I don't look for it to be perfect, but I definitely look for it to be people I that aren't my close friends to have said, yeah, no, this is good. This is interesting. This is something I'm looking for that spark of joy. Or sometimes it is playing with people and they forget that it's a play test, you know, so they don't say it's amazing. They don't say this is the greatest thing, you know, since sliced cheese, but they're just like, okay, well, this strategy, I want to figure this strategy out. They're just trying to win. They just get lost in that. And I'm like, okay, this is something that, you know, maybe can be shared.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Another question, boy, I'm just going into the playtesting thing, 'cause I'm just really curious. And a lot of people that aren't in the business, and like, again, like I'm just a podcast host or whatever, and I've seen some of the behind the scenes stuff and stuff like that, but there are some things that are still new to me. Like when you find playtesters in certain, like, you know, like cons and stuff like that, like how do you go about that? Is it something where you just do like you would at any con, just say like, this is what it is, put it on there, you know, like their sign up or whatever? Or do you actually try to like pull people aside and say, hey, we're looking to play test this, could you give us a few minutes of your time, you know, that kind of thing?
So for most of the in-person play, you know, most of the play testing I've done, like before, you know, before pitching, is at things like Unpub or conventions where kind of that's the point, and we all know. Or especially since I was working on this during lockdown, it was a lot of virtual online testing where I just find designers and other designers, other playtesters, like, hey, let's swap our games and try stuff. For this one, I did a good number of kind of blind playtests, just people I met on Twitter or, you know, online, and were designers or were just fellow people who were interested. And I said, hey, would you mind? Here's a print and play version. Can you take a look and at least tell me, is it something, you know, at least get some feedback without me explaining and telling you how great it is, right? With you being able to teach your friends and then, you know, come back to me and have to explain back what you just did. And that way you're less inclined to lie to me. So, I mean, mostly I use, like, you know, conventions and groups that are for playtesting. You know, of course I have my friends at home, you know, on my home game night that I forced to do it, but they're bribed with snacks. So that's not always good playtesting feedback.
Yeah. It's funny that they always tell you, you know, you should always do it with people you don't know instead of friends and stuff like that. But like, even I am working on a game, which I'll probably just end up putting out myself, 'cause I don't have the guts to pitch it to people. But even when I'm doing it, like, I'm always like, okay, guys, give me your honest feedback. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to sugarcoat anything, you know? So they're always like, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is cool. This is wrong. You know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, one piece of advice I figured out back to Magic. I found that people who play a lot of Magic the Gathering are great playtesters. They're not going to like your game because it's not Magic, but they're going to be able to find the weirdest exploits. And I've had these tests with people. I'll say, hey, this is, they'll say, oh yeah, this works, except I put this card and this card and this card, and now your game doesn't work anymore. I'm like, how did you? Oh my God. So always test with Magic players. They're fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, nice. Yeah. Just the mechanics in their head, and they'll be able to, you know, find the good parts and bad parts. That makes sense.
Yeah. They're used to that kind of combinatorics kind of thinking, you know, so it's a good perspective to have.
So when it came to the background of it, again, going back to olden times, just because I'm not very good at history myself, is it something, did you go back and do a little studying more of back of what happened during those times, so you had, you know, everything kind of correct? And even though this is a game and it's not technically real, that kind of thing, like, did you try to do as much, you know, work as you could to kind of help make this as close to what you would assume would happen back in those days than it actually is?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't want someone to learn how to clean human waste from my board game. No, it's not like that. Yeah, so like I said, it was a subject that one of those weird history things that stuck with me, and I just kind of every once in a while would look into a little bit. And then when I started working this game more, you know, took up more of my time, whenever I kind of hit a snag, I'd go do a little bit of research and figure out, you know, a little bit more and say, okay, that's how it worked in history. How could that translate? You know, I don't know. Do I do, you know, option A or option B? Well, this one I can justify with history. So, okay, I'll do that one. Or, you know, the game has these cards that represent people you can hire to help you at night and, you know, clear out the waste. And so I just went looking like, what other occupations were there at the time that would have been, you know, low enough class, you know, in the hierarchy to have done the dirty work? What other jobs were there? What did they do? Okay. What's this guy? There's people who just went around collecting dog poop. Yeah. That's kind of what they did. That was their whole job. That's fascinating. Okay. Let me bring that into the game. And then I just think, okay, well, mechanically, what would that do? So I did a lot of that. And then, when, you know, got closer, I started pitching and started thinking about, you know, publishing it, got closer. I did a little more like in-depth research just to make sure, cause I knew, you know, Board Game Geek being what it is, someone's going to come to me and say, oh, well, you labeled this the something that doesn't make any historical sense because they were the wrong time period. So I'm like, okay, I'll do a little bit of reading. So at least I'm a little more right. So I definitely did a lot more, you know, a lot more reading because, you know, because of the game.
Because of absolutely. That's awesome.
Again, I find it fascinating. I think I had a really great high school history teacher, and kind of what she was really good at doing is telling a really, really cool story. Like, here's the day in the life of this random historical person nobody cares about, and here's why that one day was fascinating. And you learn that, you internalize it as a story, as this cool fact, and it helps you to anchor other pieces of history because you learn something else. Say, oh, that's the same year that weird dude with the candle accident was alive. Well, that's interesting. Oh, wait, this is before that happened. You know, so I just kind of like it as an anchor to say, okay, well, there are people who went around shoveling poop for a living. It was an interesting job. And here's why it existed. Here's why it's important. And you can kind of learn from that. And I like learning history that way. So again, it's one of those things I can geek out on all night. This weird, nice, dumb thing. But yeah, so it always fascinated me. And so I just leaned into it and said, yeah, sure. I'll pretend it's research. I can justify the time of spending reading about poop.
Yeah. That's awesome. You're doing that for your job. That's weird. So for the people that don't know and that haven't heard us talk before, you are a part of Stone Circle Games. You have a part in development in some of their games that they have. And now you are technically just a designer, and you're letting your baby go off into another publisher, and they get to do kind of what they want with it, with obviously with your blessing, but like, it's kind of out of your hands. Like, how does that feel?
Yeah. Really scary at first. We had a kind of a group call a while back when they were first picking it up, they're first looking at the contract. We kind of talked through what their plans were, who I was. They wanted to get to know me and see, like, this could be a crazy person. He made a game about poop. He's probably crazy. But we actually did it. Yeah, it would not be wrong. Yeah. just not why they suspected. But obviously the theme came up. And I had prepared for that because I was like, of course, this is going to ask about theme. I have all these backup themes. It could be this. It could be that. If you want to be super dry Euro, here's a theme. If you want to be, you know, with miniatures, here's a theme. I did a little bit of homework. And so that was very, very scary for me because, as I probably picked up on, I'm very invested in the theme. I think it's fun and interesting. Yeah. And so I secretly really hoped that they would go with it. And so we had this conversation. And I could kind of see one of the guys was like, I don't know. What are your other plans? Okay, we'll think about that. Oh boy, yeah, no, I can't. I gotta think about it. And but David, you know, was very much, you know what? I think I'm kind of in John's camp. Let's kind of try it. And I kind of talked to him afterwards. Like, that made it so much easier. I was so nervous, so nervous.
Yeah.
Having him in my camp was so great. And so I think he thinks it's just as quirky and fun as I do. And so from then on, it was a lot less scary just because, you know, we're going to pick, say, artists, and he's getting my input, or we're talking about, you know, how we're going to communicate this and stuff. I was like, well, you seem to be in the same vibe and in the same groove I am. Whatever. I don't have to worry about this anymore. And so you've seen some of the artwork that's coming out. We talked a little bit with the owner of the company about kind of the general feel and the tone of the art. But that was kind of it. And he found someone who, again, just had the same mix of whimsy and seriousness. So when I saw that, I was just like, that's awesome. That's exactly what I had in mind. That's perfect.
And just looking at some of the art that you sent me, like, and again, if people go on Blue Sky Grill Games, their account, you can see a couple of different pieces. It, like, again, like you said, it plays off the quirkiness of the game, but it also, the art itself is so well done. It makes it look very professional. Like, it makes it look like almost like you're reading out of a book that's talking about what happened back then, you know? And it's like, we don't have to show you all the details. We can just be like, this is what happened, and these are the people that did it, you know, that kind of thing. And I respect that. I like that's the choice that they took.
Yeah, no, it was really, there's a couple early ones we looked at where we're just kind of talking back and forth. It's like, I can see his back pain, this character. And there's that note of like the political satire cartoon, like the little bit of cartooniness. And we kind of went back and forth, like, do we make it sillier? Do we make it more serious? But yeah, I think the artist did a fantastic job of capturing really strong feel there. Like I said, you can feel his back pain when you look at him, like, oh, you're just carting these barrels of slop every day. Oh my goodness, you made, yeah. Poor guy.
Yes. As someone that does manual labor for a living, I get that and I respect that.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Okay, that's awesome. Well, I don't think I have too many more questions. Like, we kind of talked about it before. It looks like Grail Games is looking for around April-ish, as far as you said, that they were trying to get your Kickstarter going. They don't have a precise date, but again, things like that happen. They want it, I'm sure they're just trying to make sure that, you know, everything is, you know, ready to roll before that date, and you don't want to take any shortcuts and stuff like that. So,
yep, that's the plan.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I'm really excited to see it. I'm definitely going to be a day one backer because I've always liked your games. I've always liked you. You always seem to make something that's very different, I feel like. So it'll be really cool to see this game once it's actually funded and ready to produce. I'm going to say that. I'm going to cross my fingers because I don't want to jinx it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you also said that you, for the first time, let's try that again. It's the way I started it made it sound really bad. But you said that it's on some anticipated list.
Yeah, well. David from Grail Games pinged me one day. He's like, oh yeah, by the way, I think it's in a YouTube video somewhere. I'm like, what? And so of course I spent the next hour just searching and finding it. Yeah.
Nice.
So now that's I'm awesome. Embarrassed to say how many times I put into Google Night Soil Anticipated Games 2025. It's not zero. I'll say that. It's not zero.
That's awesome. Hey, it's your baby. You gotta be excited about it. If you're not excited about it, then who else is gonna be?
That's a fair point.
That's awesome. Well, we're excited about it too. We'd love to thank John for coming on again. It's always nice to talk to you. Always good to be able to say, hey, it's been a bit. So thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a lot of fun.
No problem. Like I said, around April, make sure you take a look. Really haunt Kickstarter. Look for Night Soil. Look for Grail Games. And make sure that you snag a copy when you can. All right, we're going to let you go for now. I think that's all I have to say for now. We'll see you next time. And this was the MFG Cast. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.